Welcome, everybody, to the Can Mayonnaise Kill a Jedi podcast. I am your co-host, Hannah.
And I am your main host, the Artificial Dragon. All right, and a kind of a little bit of a, I guess you could say, update to the channel, as you can see from the splash screen. It's been changed a little bit, and as you can tell, we no longer have a Mon Calamari with the out of order sign plastered on his face. Instead, we have a little memorial with his face, his derpy little face, as well as the his drawing of a Sun Crusher right next to it.
Just insert kid in the background. I'm not dead!
But yeah, just a little update since Kit is basically retired from the channel. He might pop in every once in a while, but for all intents and purposes, he's retired. This is our nice little departure, sort of tribute. There we go.
Yeah, a tribute.
Yeah. So anyway, so for this month, we do like these updates like 2 weeks after they're posted on Patreon. But for this month, we have a good old Patreon art piece of Hannah's new fan favorite character, X-Arcoon.
Yep.
He's just shirtless, flexing his biceps on his throne on Yavin 4, inviting you to join the dark side.
I volunteer a
And I'm sure we got plenty of Sims that are more than willing to join his side. The dark side specifically. Not just for the cookies, but for those nice little yoked biceps. Anyway,
I mean, those abs, you could skate on them.
You could make diamonds from those biceps. But anyway, so we're going to try a new little formula. Like, our current schedules for Can Mayonnaise Kill Jedi podcast is an episode like once or twice a month. We're kind of I'm going to try a new thing where it's every Thursday somewhere around there, at least for recording dates, and then we post them on Tuesday somewhere around there. It kind of depends on how fast I edit these things out and when we get the thumbnail art, but we're going to try and be more frequent, perhaps more.
Emphasis on try.
We'll try, but both me and Hannah still have real life to go through, but we'll try and be more frequent with our podcast episodes. Just something that that I wanted to try since it's not going to be exactly conflicting with our D&D sessions and all that fun stuff. But anyway, on top of that, Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy holidays, or whatever holidays you love celebrating. Yeah.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah. Just in case this podcast episode gets released way, way, way later than I suspect it would be. But in any case, happy holidays, and I hope you're having a wonderful time with friends and family this lovely month of the year. Anyway, Hannah, I'm sure you know what today's episode is going to be about.
Yep, we're going to be talking about the fan service race.
Yes.
The Twi'leks.
Specifically, yes, the Twi'leks. The nice little smooth female aliens. Oh, I say female. There's males too, but they're like the main focus is the females of the race because they are so smooth and smooth brain.
That's why I say fan service.
Yeah, the Twi'leks are probably one of the most popular, if not most recognizable, humanoid races in all of sci-fi or just science fiction in general.
I would say all of Star Wars.
Like, I would say, but I mean, like, even if you're not overly familiar with Star Wars, there's probably somebody out there who knows about the Twi'leks or just that weird alien race with the head tails or whatever they are. Kind of like with the Vulcans, with Spock, or the Asari from Mass Effect. I know you don't know anything about Mass Effect, but the Asari are basically what the Twi'leks are in Star Wars.
Okay.
But they're not in bondage. They're actually the dominant race in the galaxy.
Either way, the Twi'leks might be in bondage, but they are one of the most prominent races in the Star Wars galaxy.
Yeah.
They have so many people.
Oh, yeah. Probably second only to
human. Their population
human.
Probably rivals humans.
Yeah, probably. Because they are everywhere. Like, literally everywhere. Like, at a random spaceport, somewhere in politics,
you'll
a
see them
smuggler.
All over cantinas.
Yeah. And, you know, they're prominently known as slave girls and servants, all that fun stuff, because fan service, big boba as well. But anyway, so let's get down to what the Twi'leks are as a race. The Twi'leks are from the planet of Ryloth, which is in the Outer Rim territory, so it's basically in the middle of buttfuck nowhere, even more so than Tatooine, basically.
Quote-unquote backwater planet.
Yep. Ryloth is a harsh and rocky world that is a tidally locked planet. Do you know what that means, Anna?
No, I don't.
So basically a tidally locked planet is, it never rotates. I mean, it rotates around the sun, but the planet itself doesn't rotate.
It doesn't rotate. Oh, okay.
So one side is always facing the sun, while the other doesn't.
Okay.
So yeah, kind of pretty shitty right off the bat.
Yeah.
So one side, which is always facing the sun, is obviously called the Brightlands, and the side that doesn't face the sun is called the Nightlands. And as you can imagine, with the surface that always faces the sun, it is insanely hot. Like, it's barely habitable. I don't think even the Twi'leks would wander over there. I think mostly the Brightlands are basically an area that Twi'leks sent outcasts to basically die in the heat.
So the Brightlands are basically Tatooine on
basically
habitable planet.
Tatooine on crack.
Okay.
Nobody can live. I mean, there's a couple of creatures that can live in the Brightlands, but the Twi'leks obviously can't.
Yeah.
And the Nightlands are covered in darkness. I mean, you could live in the Nightlands, but it's like living in the caves for over a millennia.
I mean, Dathomirian witches do it.
That is true. Yes, very true. Ryloth is orbited by 5 moons, by the way.
Okay.
And let's see. And with those 5 moons, it leads to subtle tidal effects on the planet's liquid core and underground springs.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So at least it has some good amount of water underneath its surface. While a majority of Ryloth's surface is deserts, it's a planet of extremes. Like, for example, it has mountain ranges with mist-covered peaks, shadowy valleys, along with snowy wastes joined by just a temperate band of, okay, so like the equator that borders the Nightlands and the Brightlands, mm-hmm, that's the very small area that's habitable for the Twi'leks.
Okay.
So yeah, like if you really think about it, 95% of Ryloth is just uninhabitable for the Twi'leks.
Funny that's the case when they're the most populous race in the galaxy.
That is, yeah, very ironic. And it's not shown in canon, probably because they don't want to show just how desolate this planet is, but semantics, I suppose.
I mean, we only see a bit of Ryloth in the Ryloth arc.
Yeah, that is true. But a majority of a Twi'lek population resides in, like, caves and everything, because that's the place where they're most safe and where they have the most food and everything.
Yep, caves, plateaus.
Yep.
Kind of like the
don't hurt yourself.
The Montezuma's Well, and, you know,
yeah,
the house is built into the mountain.
Yeah, exactly like that, yeah. And, like, it's pretty obvious, Ryloth is an unforgiving world, with many of its seasons and weathers being unpredictable, with high winds of over 310 miles per hour being enough to sculpt the landscape.
Jesus.
Most infamously, Ryloth has a phenomenon called heat storms, which commonly happens on Ryloth's Brightlands, which consists of furious cyclonic winds that reach temperatures of over 500 degrees.
Fuck that.
Yeah, Basically, just for a comparison, Death Valley's highest recorded temperature is 134 degrees.
And that could kill a person.
Yep. A heat storm could basically disintegrate anybody.
Fuck that.
Yeah. Yeah. It just keeps going up and up and up.
No wonder the Twi'leks are so widespread. Get the fuck off Ryloth as soon as you can.
Yeah, fuck that shit. I might as well go to Coruscant and be a slave. Fuck that.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's see. On the borders of both lands, I already said it's a habitozone. It's called the Twilight Realm. It has caverns that give the native Twi'lek a underground city. And they kind of blockade the entrances with, steel doors to ensure that the local fauna don't come in and murder all of them and all that. Because there are a lot of life forms on Ryloth that could easily kill a Twi'lek.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Like, there's the, But Lilex, they're basically a giant insectoid species with a thick carapace, spiked pincers, and tentacles, which are one of the few animals that could actually survive in the Brightlands.
Oh, why not?
Yeah. Like, there's actually this novel called, I believe, The Dark Lords of the Sith, where both Palpatine and Darth Vader decided to give Ryloth a visit. This is a canon novel, by the way.
Okay.
Long story short, they get shot down, and the Chom Sandula was counting on the Lilex to kill them off, because there's so many of them. They're basically a hive mind race. But
yet another insectoid hive mind race.
Yeah. Funny thing is, Palpatine and Darth Vader, along with two royal guards, go into the hive chamber of the Lilex, and they actually fight the queen. But there's like swarms upon swarms of Lilex, and even Darth Vader is having an extremely hard time trying to fight them off. Except for Palpatine.
Of course, because it's Palpatine.
Because he's just, like, Darth Vader is just fighting for his fucking life. Meanwhile, his master's just like a dance, just cleaving bugs apart and just laughing his ass off.
Of course, it's Palpatine.
Yeah, I mean, he rarely
he
gets away from his throne.
This shit.
He's having a blast.
Even though he hardly ever moves, anytime he does get action, he revels in it.
Oh yeah, he revels in it so much. I really need to get around to reading that book. I heard it's pretty good. But anyway, though, despite this being a shitty desert world in the middle of the Outer Rim, there are some positive aspects of Ryloth. There's this beautiful site on Ryloth called the Floating Rock Gardens, which is a well-known tourist attraction, probably the only reason why any off-roaders would come to Ryloth.
Most likely.
Think of,
aside from slavers.
Yeah. Think of, there's no pictures of this, but imagine like the floating rocks from Avatar.
Uh-huh.
That's basically what those are.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, like, the winds are so powerful, it allows the rocks to gently float through the air. And over the years, tourists just kind of add rocks to it.
That sounds really cool.
It does sound really cool. Yeah. And that's pretty much the only reason why anybody would want to go to Ryloth. Well, except for the Twi'leks, of course.
Well, I mean, aside from slavers.
Yeah. Let's see. And then Ryloth has several capitals. One of them is Kaloon, and the more famous one is Lesu, which is basically that city in the middle of a spire. I'm not sure if you've gotten to that certain part of the Clone Wars.
I have not.
Okay.
Not yet. But there is a artifact mentioned in Vett's little side missions of Swator. She and her old gang are trying to find a Twi'lek artifact called the Star of Kala'oon. I don't think there is a proper description of it, but, you know, it has the name of one of the capitals.
Okay. Good to know, good to know. I'm not aware of that artifact, but always good to know.
Yep.
And then, let's see. I imagine, like, Kaloon and Lesu are two capitals. One of them, I imagine one of them is, like, the ancient capital, like Kyoto in Japan, and the other is the modern capital, like Tokyo and all that.
Yeah.
But anyway, Kaloon is a city found within the lonely Five Mountain Range and is a and is basically home to a large-ass spaceport where a majority of Twi'lek commerce is based on, like, if there's, like, any trade, import, export of any kind, that's mostly where all that is happening, is at that capital. And then Lesu is a large city built within a massive rock spire in the middle of a rocky mesa. And the only way you could get onto it is with a laser bridge.
Oh, okay.
I assume there is, like, hidden underground tunnels because that's what Twi'leks do. But that's the only way you could get to Lesu.
Okay.
And then Lesu is the home of a... basically, the only known government on Ryloth, the Twi'lek Clan Council, which basically is headed by, I will go more into their government later, but it has, like, five major head of five major clans ruling over it and dictating what they do with Twi'leks and, you know, politics and all that stuff.
Okay.
But anyway,
And there are a lot of offshoots of that, you know, like, in Swator, in the Jedi story,
mm-hmm.
either Jedi Knight or Consular, there is, on Tython, a village of Twi'leks who is run by a matriarch.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I remember that.
Kalagori Village.
Yep. And then, described a little bit of Ryloth and how shitty it is, let me talk about the Twi'leks themselves.
They come in a very big rainbow of colors.
Oh, yes, they do. So the Twi'lek are a race of sentient, hairless humanoid mammals that come in, as you mentioned before, a variety of colors, ranging from white, orange, yellow, green, lavender, pink, blue, tan, purple, black, gray, and red, while having a varied height from the smallest being 5'3" to 7'9".
Yeah, 5'3" being a child.
Yep. They have humanoid-like ears, which is usually found on males, but
the
for
males
females,
too.
Yeah, the males have the humanoid ears, while the females have the cone ears to their side for some reason.
It's never explained.
Yeah, just whatever. Both.
But it's a good way to tell the difference between a male and a female.
That is true, yes. Both female and male Twi'leks have little to no body hair, with the exception of, like, eyelashes, which is an evolutionary trait of keeping out sand out of their eyes.
Yeah.
But there are some Twi'lek that exhibit, like, beard, chest hair, and armpit hair for some reason.
Hmm. So they have some hair, just not on their heads.
Yeah, just, some say it's basically a mutation, like, those are the very rare Twi'lek that actually have hair for some reason. Like, in the same way that, what ethnic group rarely gets, like, a beard or anything?
I don't know.
Okay. Basically, it's like...
It's kind of like how elves don't grow beards.
That is true, yeah.
But there are rare cases where elves can't have beards.
Yep. And typically, they don't have eyebrows, but female Twi'leks actually paint on eyebrows to make themselves look more attractive to aliens.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's exactly what women do here in the real world.
Nothing new there. Though it is important to note that some female Twi'lek are universally slender and attractive to nearly every race in the galaxy, which made them obviously very popular as slaves and servants, commonly seen in the entertainment profession in the galaxy as singers or dancers.
Yep.
Many young Twi'lek were sold into slavery to basically become status symbols, usually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But some of them, a lot of them taken against their will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Vet explains in her backstory, her mom, her and her sister had to work the mines of Ryloth for years until they were all separated.
Yep. That's usually how it goes.
She was under, like, three different masters before he would encounter her on Korriban.
Yeah. They're like organic versions of droids at that point.
Yeah.
They, like, get traded between masters.
Yeah. That sucks.
It really does suck. Given the harsh conditions on Ryloth, the lack of food, usually, the Twi'lek are evolved to be omnivores and have multiple stomachs, which allows them to eat almost anything. I imagine they wouldn't eat, like, rocks or dirt, but they could essentially eat almost anything.
Yeah, just like the Togruta. The Togruta have multiple stomachs as well.
Yeah. And their food is so scarce on their world, they even go to eat Minox.
Well, I wonder what Minox tastes like.
Like, there's many popular recipes of Minox. There's the spicy Twi'lek dish called the Minox Cloud City and the Minox Coronet City. So apparently it's very, very spicy. But just to give you a general idea of how scarce food is on their planet, they resort to eating basically the rats of Star Wars.
Ew.
The space rats. But anyway, it is incredible.
Hey, they could taste like chicken. You never know.
You never know, yeah. It would be incredibly rare for a Twi'lek to refuse food at all when they're traveling off-world, because it's like their equivalent of refusing money.
I know Ornfree Todd in
New York. Oh, no. And I'm actually about to get to why Ornfree Todd is in such a high position. Obesity is kind of associated with success and influence within their culture. Like, oh, this guy is really fat and he has so much thickness in his leku and everything. That must mean he is very influential and he has access to all kinds of food. He must be the wisest of everybody.
It was the same thing back in ancient times, like, you know, medieval days. And,
yeah.
You know, if you had extra weight, you know that you were rich because you could feed yourself.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, with like a lot of nobles, like King George.
Oh, yeah. No, not King George. King Henry VIII.
There we go.
He had gout.
Yeah, he was chunk.
He was so fucking fat.
He's like so fat he couldn't eat. They had to put him on a rope to get him on his horse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a fat ass. But that's a status symbol back in the old days.
Yep, because you could eat that much food because you are wealthy and shit.
Yep, you were wealthy enough to buy that much food and it was all rich food, too.
Yeah. Though their most recognizable part of their biology is their leku, a.k.a. their head tails. In the Twi'lek language, they're called the Chonchin, which is basically translates to a semi-basic of twin leku. And it's kind of derived of the Twi'lek isn't exactly the name of their race. That's just a combination of the translation of their leku. Like, twin leku, mm-hmm. Twi'lek.
Yeah.
Yeah. The leku serve as their sensory organ, specifically serving as a part of their brain, which extends into their leku.
Yep, I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. Though it does serve a variety of purpose in their society, and is also used to store fat and as a way of attracting mates. Yeah. Though the leku is highly sensitive, and if somebody grabbed the leku forcibly, it's going to hurt. Like, it would essentially make the Twi'lek go unconscious.
Ouch.
Yep. Very, very painful. Though there have been cases that if a leku is destroyed, it would cause brain damage, but in some cases, there are like individual Twi'lek that actually have cybernetic leku.
And they can live with about half of one. I've seen like with that that Twi'lek that's in the not the most recent update to Swator, but the one before that where Malgus returns.
No. I haven't played that far, honestly.
But you remember the cinematic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That Twi'lek Jedi had half a leku.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, not complete brain damage. It's kind of weird to understand how much of a leku the Twi'lek can live with, but there are, like, I mean, it's like kind of the same thing with the Hutt. It's like, you remember there's like an individual Hutt that had half of his head blown off, but yeah. He could, and half of his brain is gone, but he's still acting normally and everything.
Yeah.
Kind of an interesting thing to think about, though. Anyway.
Yeah, very true. Anyway, moving on.
The Twi'lek take great pride in their leku, especially when they're confronted by other races, and they kind of see it. The the term head tail as sort of a slur.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. They take great pride in it. Like, oh my god, what is that thing on your head? Hey, don't you dare sass about my Leku boy.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. So as I mentioned before, the two chin is a reference for each Leku. Chun is the left Leku, and Chin is the right Leku.
Okay.
And the Twi'leks have their native language, which is called Twi'leki or Ril. And it is spoken using a combination of words and a subtle movements of their Leku as a sort of pseudo sign language.
That's cool.
Like, for example, where was it? Okay, before I go into the Leku and all of its meanings, examples of a Twi'leki language are Numa, meaning sister, Ayla, meaning mist or smoke, and Ula, meaning water.
Okay.
Yeah. Though an interesting example can be seen with non-Twi'lek names, such as the case with, are you at all familiar with Wedge Antilles?
Heard of him. Yeah, he's one of the X-Wing fighters.
Yeah, he's a very important X-Wing fighter character. Appears in a lot of novels after Return of the Jedi and everything. So Wedge Antilles is like two words. They roughly translate into, in the Twi'lek language, it's roughly translated into one so foul as to induce vomiting in a rancor. However, as we'll go into with the Twi'lek naming conventions, if it's combined into one word as Wedge Antilles, it is roughly translated to Slayer of Stars.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. Then we're going to go into the Leku language. Let's see. So if the tip of a right Leku is raised, it means hello.
Okay.
And if the left Leku is dipping like this, it means goodbye.
So they can actually move them.
Yep, they can move them. I think they're also prehensile, meaning they could actually grab onto objects and everything.
I've never seen a tweet like do that in any Star Wars media.
Probably because I imagine it's like a evolutionary thing, like with, you know how like in monkeys they have a tail that could coil around objects and everything? And our ancestors used to do that, but we have vestigial tails nowadays.
Yeah.
I imagine that's the same thing with a Twi'lek, but most of them just don't know how to control their Leku like that.
Okay.
But anyway, if a Leku, if both Leku cross like this, it means I love you.
Oh.
Yeah. Though due to this, there are many slave owners that take great care to give their Twi'lek servants headdresses to basically restrict their Leku from moving around and everything.
Oh.
And it's kind of gotten to the point where headdresses are a prominent part of Twi'lek society.
You see almost every female Twi'lek wearing a headdress.
Yeah, so that's probably the reason why, you know, they don't use them more often, because, oh, headdresses, no worries.
And it just adds a nice little accessory.
Yeah, just kind of self-restrictive, though.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, kind of likened to a muzzle, basically.
If you look at it that way,
yeah. Basically. Damn. Let's see. Like other races with a huge diversity, the Twi'lek have their own subspecies. There's Verutin, which are basically the common blue Twi'lek. Mm-hmm. They're called Verutin. And then there's the most rare one, which are called the Lethians, which are the red Twi'leks. They're like the most rare subspecies of a Twi'leks.
Hmm. And what about any other color? Yeah. Into that category?
I think they're like moderately common. It's just that the blue ones are the most common. Like a majority of named Twi'leks are blue.
Insert picture of Ayla Secura.
Ayla Secura. Yeah, let me want to put a sexy picture of Ayla Secura somewhere around in this episode. Anyway, it is said that one in a million Twi'leks had red skin, while many female Lethian Twi'lek can be found on the world called Nanius Free, which is found in wild space.
Okay.
So anyway, nice little dive into their biology and everything. Let's go in a little bit about their culture. The Twi'lek are well-renowned throughout the galaxy as being graceful and physically attractive, which kind of nailed in the head multiple times in this episode.
Yep.
Ah, big booba. God. Anyway, nearly every sentient being in the galaxy find them extremely attractive, even ones that are nowhere humanoid, like the Hutt are a prominent example.
Yep.
Like, Jabba the Hutt is like, oh yes, Twi'leks. And it's become so ingrained that basically slavery is the number one export on Ryloth.
Well, no shit.
Yep, it's been happening for literal centuries, to the point where even the Republic tolerates it.
And the Republic shouldn't, but yeah. They're making no moves to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm. And there's a common proverb for the Twi'lek is, if you can't defeat the storm, then you must ride it.
Yeah.
Kind of like our version of, if you can't beat them, join them.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure the Twi'lek have just allowed this thing to happen for centuries, because why the fuck should we go against it?
Yeah.
As fucked up as that might sound, it kind of makes sense if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
But aside from slavery, there are 100, but not even 100, but thousands and thousands of free Twi'leks.
Yeah. And it's also best exemplified during the Clone Wars, where Ryloth's politicians were extremely loyal to the Republic. But their more ambitious individuals kept negotiations open with the Separatists. You know, just a little backdoor, just in case. Due to their low standing within Galactic Society, most Twi'lek are commonly seen as merchants or even criminals. You could see Twi'leks in every step of society. Like, you have politicians, you have
Governor
Jedi.
Suresh.
Yep. You have military officers, soldiers, Jedi Knights, Sith Lords, the whole shebang.
Yeah, so they're in every walk of life.
Yep.
They're not just relegated to slaves.
Yeah, and ironically enough, despite having a high slavery culture to them, the Twi'leks do have a rich warrior culture, and they are probably the second most popular species to be amongst the ranks of the Mandalorians.
Not surprising.
Yeah, it is very surprising. Most male Twi'leks wore long, loose robes, while the Twi'leks typically wore lighter, more revealing clothing to maintain their elegance.
The females, yes.
Yep. When welcoming a stranger or guest for the first time, the Twi'lek would usually exchange gifts or something else as a pleasantry, so to speak. Though they are very welcoming to a larger number of beings, they usually throw a party or show off traditional dancing and everything to entertain their guests.
That's cool.
And in the words of Chum Syndulla, it is... direct quote, "It is customary to share what we do have."
That's cool.
Yeah, because it's, even though they're slaves, they do have this deep family connection with each other. Like, they have clans and everything, and they value family. Insert Van Diesel, be there for family meme here.
I mean, the whole driving point of one of the arcs of Rebels is the Kallikori.
I'm actually about to get to that, actually. So the Twi'leks, as you mentioned before, there's a very important heirloom, a totem called the Kallikori, which is passed from parent to child for generations. According to tradition, each parent of a certain lineage adds additions to the family artwork to include themselves in the family legacy, so to speak.
Pretty cool.
Yeah,
too. A way to pass down, like, and point out, like, hey, your great-great-great-great-grandma did this.
Yep.
And my uncle did that.
Pretty much. And to a mere outsider, it is basically worthless, but for a Twi'lek, it is beyond valuable.
To Thrawn, it was pretty valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, because, he loves art and culture and everything.
Well, he nearly slapped Imperial because of it.
Oh yeah, he's all like, "I'm sorry, Governor. I tend to forget that not everybody shares my intrigue in art as much as I do."
Yeah, that's the one rare time you actually see Thrawn angry.
Yep,
is when someone
much.
Insults art.
All right. Now we go into the Twi'lek naming conventions. It's basically a singular name that combines both their personal and clan names instead of the two being two separate names, like a surname and last name.
A first name and a last name. Thank last you. Name and surname are the same.
First name and surname. Thank you. This change was meant to symbolize a way of unity between the individual and their clan. Though a Twi'lek's name could be split into multiple parts if they are, for example, exiled as criminals.
Yeah.
Because that you're no longer part of our clan. Get the fuck out of here.
Yep.
But apparently, as the years go on, this convention is kind of whittled down a little bit because there are prominent Twi'lek individuals that have both their clan and their personal name separate for some reason. Even high-ranking ones. An example of a true Twi'lek name would be Nyaro-Nyon, though his name could be split into two parts when used outside of a local culture, becoming Nyaro-Ven.
Okay.
In this case, the clan being named Ven. Let's see. Twi'lek society is divided by clans, each clan having its own city, and each city having its own government, which in turn is led by a five-member head clan. So it's like multiple clans, and there's just this big honcho clan that rules over all the other clans. These five Twi'lek would lead the society in all manners until one member of a head clan dies, and at that point, the remaining members of a head clan would be cast out into the barren Brightlands to perish.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Very, very harsh. This allowed... It's very harsh, yes, but this allowed, like... Think of it as a way of if the head honcho of his old clan that has been ruling for generations, and they... One of their members dies, but then, like, one of their relatives takes power, nothing's really gonna happen. So it's kind of their way of... Make out with the old and replace them with the new.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah. It's very harsh.
Our government did that.
Yeah. this allowed the new generation to take over without any restrictions the previous one may have had over them. Though, if this new generation didn't feel ready to rule, then a set of regions would be selected to rule until the proper time comes. So, if you're all like, hey you, Jimmy, I want you to leave a clan now. I'm not feeling like it. Can I have my uncle rule for me instead? Sure thing. Hmm. Anyway, so I'm legitimately surprised of how in-depth Twi'lek culture is.
Yeah.
And their biology and everything. Where we didn't have much for the Togruta or the Verpine in previous episodes.
Yeah, because they're not expanded upon.
No. Very little on their homeworlds, too, where Ryloth is just a barren fucking wasteland of a middle buttfuck nowhere.
Yep.
So we got all of that out of the way, a nice little perspective on the Twi'lek and everything. Let's talk about their history a little bit. In their history, it is up to debate if the Twi'lek are a naturally evolved species, according to Ashana, aka the Mother Machine from SwissTor.
I thought you mispronounced it, but I'm blanking on the name.
Yeah, Asha.
Asha, yeah.
Asha. Yeah, the Vurakata Mother Machine who created a Zubrag, Twi'lek, and all the other humanoid races.
Yep.
As a way to get more perspective on why the Rakata are losing their connection to the Force. So, there's like one side where it's all like this AI created the synthetic race, which eventually became the Twi'lek. But there are accounts that the Twi'lek actually existed long before the Rakata were a thing.
How could that be if the Rakata supposedly created the Twi'lek?
I think it's like the aspect, like there's the natural version of the Twi'lek, and then there's the synthetic version of the Twi'lek with more genetic diversity and everything like that, and then they just intermingled, which is kind of a neat way to explain why they come in so many fucking colors.
I guess.
Yeah. Though despite that, Despite that, at around 10,000 years before the Battle of Yavin, the Republic discovered the planet of Ryloth, and they found the Twi'lek to be this very primitive race. Like, to give you an idea, they're basically cavemen. Like, they haven't even invented rockets at this point in their time. Mm-hmm. They haven't even colonized their orbiting five moons on Ryloth. Mm-hmm. So you gotta imagine, why would the Republic accept this primitive race into their galactic collective when they have essentially nothing to offer?
More population, I guess? I don't know.
Slavery has already been a thing in Twi'lek culture way before the Republic arrived, and there are some theories that this is just a greater extension on that. Like, we have talked multiple times on this episode why the Twi'lek females are so attractive.
Yes.
There's like the idea that the representatives of the Republic were all like, you may have nothing to offer, but your female are really, really attractive. If you give us some of those in return, then you could have all the political power you want, as long as we have a continuous supply of Twi'lek females.
Hmm.
So, yeah, even though the Republic has outlawed slavery, technically
it still falls under the radar.
Yeah, they would be technically indentured servants.
Technically. I mean, at the time of the old Republic, slavery is still a thing.
Yeah.
The Senate just doesn't give a shit.
Pretty much. Like, if you also, I know it's pretty fucked up to give up your children to become part of a galactic community, but if you look at it from the Twi'lek's perspective and how shitty their planet is, hey, on the bright side, at least my child will be better off under some rich alien on some high economically powerful world in the core instead of our shitty world where we have sandstorms and creatures that could kill us. Yep. And everything. So on the bright side, that's kind of it's still pretty fucked up, but that's kind of their reigning philosophy. Like, at least my child will have a better life than on Ryloth.
Yep.
While the there's like multiple ways you could pronounce Twi'leks. There's Twi'leks and there's Twi'leks. But from what I've heard, both of them are correct, basically.
Okay.
Just to clarify that. Also, for the viewers, yes, I know they speak French accents, but it's officially called Ryloth accent, so shut the fuck up.
Well, I mean, it's a French accent.
Yep.
We're just going to call it a Rylothian accent.
Pretty much, yeah. Let me see.
But us in the real world, no, it's a French accent.
It's a French accent, yeah.
It's just like how all Imperials speak with a British accent.
Yeah. And like, this indentured servitude has been happening for multiple generations, and it's allowed the Twi'lek to spread across the entire galaxy and get more political power within the Republic and everything. Like, there's like a... Okay, let me continue on. The Twi'lek clans... Blah, 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 blah. I am stumbling over my notes.
He is going all over the place right now.
Slavery, 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 basically. Though as the years passed, it was eventually discovered that Ryloth had another export of interest just hiding beneath its surface. You want to know what that is?
Gems?
Well, okay, I could see why that would be a thing. But it is this very important thing called real spice.
Drugs!
Drugs!
Gems are valuable, but drugs!
Drugs! Yeah. Money! By itself, real spice was relatively weak compared to any other spice in the galaxy. Though it could be used to create a number of medicines, when it is combined with Glitterstem, which is basically the main spice in the galaxy...
Crack!
Basically, it would be used to create glitter real, which became something much more potent. If I remember off the top of my head, it makes you lose memories, basically.
Oh, shit, so that's like angel dust.
Pretty much, yeah.
Fuck that.
Well, with this new resource discovered, the ruling Twi'lek clan leaders found of the wharf that this real spice provided to them. And they were like, we're going to try and make this a new export and, you know, lower down on the slave trade and everything and replace it, albeit one illegal commodity with another illegal commodity, mm-hmm. but still a big improvement over slavery. Unfortunately, the Twi'lek had very little success in actually selling the spice because they are very inexperienced in economics and everything of the galaxy. Though this attracted opportunity for another long-lived race in the galaxy.
The Hutts.
Pretty much, yeah. And the Hutts were like, that's free real estate. We're going to take that spice over there. And that's pretty much when the Hutts decided to up the ante with a slave trade on the Twi'leks because, ooh, we got more slaves to help us mine out all of that spice on Ryloth. And even though the Twi'leks kind of spread more across the galaxy, it was with the help of the Hutts that they spread even more across the galaxy with a slave trade and everything.
Yep.
Instead of being indentured servitude, it's actually actual slavery. And due to the Twi'leks being more and more widespread across the galaxy, they became less connected to their original homeworld, where you have like actual Twi'lek colonies creating their own subcultures and everything, like you see with the Twi'lek colonists on Typhon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is our new home. Fuck Ryloth. What is that?
Yep.
Pretty much. Though despite that, after several millennia, in 3,643 years before the Battle of Yavin, which is the general time frame of Swator and everything, the Twi'lek clans actually wrestled control of Ryloth out of the grasp of the Hutts.
Nice.
However, given how valuable the real spice mines were on Ryloth, they would continue to be raided by pirates and mercenaries.
Not surprising.
Yep. And obviously, the Republic were all like, why the fuck should we help you? Fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
And the ruling Twi'leks, this is basically what happened. It's like, yes, we finally got the Hutts off of our planet. Now we can finally get back to... Wait, what do you mean we're still slaves? Didn't we just kick the Hutts off? Oh, you mean the ruling Twi'leks are now our new slave masters? Well, fuck. So yeah, they just, it's basically that meme of under new management. It's
yeah.
just one of their ruling Twi'lek clans are the new managers now.
That sucks.
Because like, even though they have enough political influence within the Republic, it's pretty much solidified to a point where it's normal. Like, if you're going to change something, you're going to need like big, big changes. But the Twi'leks can't do that at this current point mm-hmm. in time. So, as the saying goes, if you can't beat them, join them.
Mm-hmm.
And it went pretty well. The Twi'lek clans kept on getting more wealth and influence, despite, you know, selling off all of their young girls into slavery. You know, whatever. They're getting a new life away from Ryloth anyway. Who the fuck cares? Pretty fucked up to think about it.
Yep.
Yeah. Over the next millennia, Ryloth would be conquered by different factions across the galaxy, including the Brotherhood of Darkness, which is a Sith faction that Darth Bane was a part of before he extincted them.
Mm-hmm.
The Confederacy of Independent Systems, and the Galactic Empire itself.
Of course.
Yep.
Palpatine had to have a lot of power.
Yeah. And especially with the Confederacy, when they invaded, they decided to plunder Ryloth of all of its treasures and everything. Like,
because that's what the Separatists do.
Well, the business tycoons, anyway.
Yes.
Because, Tembor was just plundering all of that sweet treasure. Yeah. Though, even though the Twi'lek people don't believe breaking free of their chains, there's a good majority of Twi'lek freedom fighters that are like, this shit is fucked up.
Prime example, Cham Syndulla.
Yep, that's where Cham Syndulla comes in, with the Twi'lek resistance, which is basically your classic rebellion against first the Confederacy of Independent Systems, and not too long after, the Galactic Empire. Where he renamed his resistance force to the Free Ryloth Movement.
Welcome to the Resistance.
Welcome to the Resistance. Viva Revolution!
Yep.
And even though they have a good stiff resistance going on, they would remain under the thumb of the Empire as a protectorate, basically.
Yeah.
But
when Freetaw kept his position, they were under the thumb of a Moth.
Yep. Who basically runs everything. Ornfreetaw is just a little puppet.
He's a puppet.
Anyway, Volva the Twi'lek would get a nice little break after the Battle of Endor, and the Empire started to fragment into separate factions across the galaxy.
Okay.
And the Twi'lek finally got some reprieve. They're like, yes, we're finally free. Thank you, Rebel Alliance. Yes, we're going to join you for a little bit. And then the New Republic was formed, and Ryloth was basically all like, okay, cool beans. However, we don't like being slaves anymore. We don't like being in your dabbling little politics no more. Ornfreetaw could fuck off.
Ornfreetaw, get fucked.
And Ryloth decided to become its own sovereign nation because...
Nice.
You know, they don't want to repeat the mistakes of the past and everything.
I don't blame them.
Yep, you don't blame them at all. This is the scenario I'm thinking of. The Twi'leks are basically that one friend. You know, they're pretty awesome, they're pretty cool, but they always find themselves in this toxic relationship that they just can't get out of.
Yeah.
Like, it's very apparent to everybody. I was like, hey, maybe you should break up with them. You're clearly not doing very well, but no matter what they're saying, you just stay in it.
Yeah.
No matter what. And then finally, they're like, finally, I got out of this toxic relationship. Fuck the Hutts. Fuck the Empire. Fuck all those people that enslaved me. I am finally free.
Insert Mel Gibson's Braveheart. Freedom!
Freedom! And they're all like, what should I do now? Maybe I should take up some knitting. And then they hear a knock on the door. They open it up and they see one of their old friends, Princess Leia. And they're all like, hey, we're good friends. We're kind of on the run from the First Order. Could we chill out in your house until everything blows over? Then they slightly look behind them and they see an entire army of First Order stormtroopers. And they're like, nope!
Nope. Slam the door.
Yeah. Just to give you context, so this is the canon timeline that I'm explaining. Basically, the Resistance is on the run from the First Order after The Last Jedi and everything.
Yep.
They briefly sheltered Leia and the Resistance, but the Twi'lek government did not like that at all.
Ryloth said, fuck off!
Yeah, they were all like, fuck off! We don't want to get blown up by the First Order. We don't want to be blown up by Starkiller Base like the New Republic did. Fuck off. Which is pretty understandable, considering everything that they went through.
Exactly. They finally had the State Supreme. It's like, fuck off.
Yep. And we're like, I mean, yeah, maybe it would have been the right thing to do to stand by Princess Leia's side, but considering the shit that they've gone through.
Exactly.
Give them a fucking break.
Fuck off.
So yeah, at least in the current canon of Star Wars, we're getting a little bit of reprieve.
That's all right. That's good.
Yeah, that is very, very good. I'm not too sure what they're doing in Legends right now. They're just kind of doing their own thing, selling more slave girls and everything. Yeah. But I think in the new canon, it's actually kind of refreshing that they're moving on from their enslavement past and everything. So now that we got their history out of the way, let's talk about some notable Twi'lek in Star Wars history.
Get ready for a list.
Oh yeah, and we'll go over some of the more notable ones. Obviously, the more famous ones are Aayla Secura, who is a very famous Twi'lek Jedi Knight.
Yep.
She actually, funny enough, she actually got introduced in some Dark Horse comics. And then George Lucas saw her and he was all like, I'm going to make her canon in my movies.
And she's an awesome Jedi.
She is an awesome Jedi.
I mean, Quinlan Vos's apprentice? You don't get a reputation from being Quinlan Vos's apprentice.
Oh, no. And she kind of has a reputation of being a fan service character.
Of course.
Obviously.
Of course.
Part of a chorus with any Twi'lek character.
Yep.
Like, there's a kind of on and off relationship with Kit Fisto and everything. You know, that famous image where they kiss underwater.
They are, no, he was quote unquote giving air to
yeah,
her.
Yeah, yeah, quote unquote.
It's like there are two people that ship Ayla. There are two people that people ship Ayla with.
Uh-huh.
Kit Fisto is one. Bly is the other.
Yep, yep. I remember that. I remember that.
I honestly think she's more compatible with Kit Fisto.
Pretty much. I've seen enough hentai to know where this is going.
Oh my god, not like that!
Sorry, I had to. Ayla Secura, it deserves her own episode later, but we'll just go through the Cliff Notes version of
it all. She was a damn good Jedi, died in a very shitty way.
Yeah, by being shot several times by her clone troopers.
It's sad.
It is sad. And then there's Ula, the slave girl who belonged to Jabba that he feeds to the Rancor in Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
I believe she is the introduction to the Twi'lek race, based on what I've seen briefly in my research. I could be wrong. Correct me in the comments down below. But
as far as we know, especially with me being a Star Wars somewhat newbie.
Yep.
As far as we know, in media-wise, Ula is the first Twi'lek.
Yep, pretty much. Then there's Vett, the Twi'lek that we mentioned numerous times
before.
Our
lovable, sassy little sister.
Yep, little sister, who is a first companion character of a Sith warrior in S'Wator.
I love her.
And she's voiced by Catherine Tabar, who voices Padme in The Clone Wars.
Awesome.
And then there's another companion character in a Coulter, Knights of the Old Republic with Revan and everything. Mission Vale, who is a street urchin on Terrace, who becomes a companion character, and she's also voiced by Catherine Tabor.
Oh, looks like I gotta watch the Couture playthrough now.
Yep. And then, more infamously, we have Darth Talon of Darth Krayt's Sith Empire, and it's pretty obvious why she's such a popular character. Yes.
Twi'lek Sith, oh, she's the hottest.
And she's red.
Yes, she is used for a lot of fan service.
A lot of NSFW. It's for Twi'leks in general, but if you Google Darth Talon, you're probably going to come across a NSFW art piece of her somewhere.
Or something else.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we're not going to go into that.
We're trying to keep this a bit kid-friendly.
A little just bit, a bit, just a little bit. I mean, we have our Patreon art pieces, so that doesn't give us much to work with. then we have Chem Sendula, who is the leader of Ryloth Resistance and is voice acted by the same guy who voice acted the medic in TF2.
Rowan Atkin-Downs.
Yep.
Very great voice actor.
And his daughter, Hera Sendula, who is the pilot of the Ghost and one of the founders of the Rebel Alliance.
Oh, I didn't know she was a founder. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, she's one of... I wouldn't say she's a quote-unquote founder, but she's an influential member of Rebel Alliance.
Yep, Hera is a pretty badass woman.
She is. She is a hard lady.
Oh, but she is the mom of the group.
She is the mom and a very good love interest to Kanan Jarrus.
Yeah.
I ship them
they had
so much.
They had a very good relationship before he passed.
Yeah. And then we go into some other notable ones. Mostly Ornfree Tah, that we made fun of several times in this episode.
No, I don't think there's anyone who likes Ornfree Tah. If I am wrong, say so in the comments, please.
He's like the new Gunray of the Twi'leks.
He's the Republic new Gunray.
He's the Republic new Gunray, yeah. He is cowardly and greedy as all hell.
Well, considering the fact that he's a fat ass, yeah.
Yep. And, he is very loyal to Palpatine. Like, even in the Imperial era, he is still just very loyal to Palpatine.
Sniveling, spineless coward. Yeah.
And he's, Even though he is loyal to Palpatine and the Empire, he always puts his own interest before the well-being of his own people or even the Empire's.
No shit.
Like, in that novel that I mentioned earlier, Vader likened, so the ship that they were on gets destroyed and they were forced to evacuate. Yep. Darth Vader likens Ornfree Taw to a rat escaping a sinking ship.
Yeah. He is that much of a fucking coward.
A loyal rat, granted.
He's still a coward. when the in the Clone Wars, when Satine is attacked by the assassin droid, he runs like a bitch.
He runs like a little bitch. Oh man! And then he's a Rodian, if that wasn't obvious. The blue Twi'lek subspecies. Let's see. Aside from Ornfree Taw, we also have. Oh, here we go. Alina Daru, who was a Twi'lek slave girl of the Empire and later lover of Darth Malgus.
Yeah. Sucks that he had to kill her, though.
Yep. But, like,
they were a good couple.
They were a good couple. Like, they legitimately love each other. Like, Malgus basically sees her as his moral consciousness most of the time.
That's pretty cool.
And she, in turn, would actually say his real name, and she legitimately is the only person that smiles at Darth Malgus's presence.
Yeah, you gotta love someone enough to do that, especially in the case of Malgus.
Yep. Who doesn't have much of a face to begin with, but semantics. Then, of course, we have Numa, who is the young Twi'lek girl found by Waxer and Boyle.
Everybody loves Numa.
Yep.
I have seen so many people requesting in AUs, like AU fix, that Waxer and Boyle adopt Numa, or the company adopts Numa.
Yeah.
It's sweet.
Yeah, she like keeps calling them Nera, which is like the Twi'lek version of brother.
Yep.
Yep.
She calls them brother. That's so sweet.
And then several years down the line, she becomes one of Cham Syndulla's most skilled warriors in the Ryloth Freedom Movement.
Adorable little thing turns into a fucking badass.
Yep. Wish we could get more, explore her character more, because she's barely touched upon, but semantics. Yeah. Let's see. And then of a rare Lethian variety, there's Darth Atruxa of the Sith Empire.
Yes, she was featured in one of the Knights of the Eternal Throne cinematics, fighting against Arkhan and Thexan when they were invading the galaxy.
Yep, and she immediately gets killed.
But you know, she was badass in trying to defend Korriban. She did her damnedest trying to defend it.
No, like literally, when I was looking across of Twi'lek characters, and I came across her article, it was just like a paragraph.
That sucks.
She looks cool, though.
She does look cool.
She's not as fanservice-y as Darth Talon, granted, but she's pretty cool.
Yeah, she looks awesome, and she's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And then we get Bink Utria, who is a prominent instructor of a Jedi Order and Jedi General during the Clone Wars.
Hmm.
She's a Rufian, the Red Twi'lek, and she was actually one of the last Jedi that stood between Grievous and Palpatine.
Oh, shit.
And she put up a much better fight than most of her compatriots.
Nice.
Being able to score 2 strikes against Grievous, I believe. And
better than the 0 that everybody else had.
Yeah.
Except Obi-Wan. That's good.
Yeah, it is pretty good. And Grievous was so moved by her skill, he actually took great care to make her death as painlessly as possible. He just brought his lightsaber and stabbed her once for the heart.
Yeah, that's very merciful for Grievous.
Yeah, and
especially because, you know, it's Grievous.
I mean, he still took her lightsaber, but he took special care not to ravage her corpse afterwards. Which, considering what he does to other Jedi that he's killed, pretty merciful.
Yeah, he's, like we said in his episode, he's still an honorable warrior at heart.
Yep. And then
at times.
Yeah, at times. And then there's another prominent one. Her name is Larenth Terek. She's a green-skinned Jedi Knight and member of a Grey Paladins, which, if you don't recall from our Force Users episode, they're basically a branch of Jedi Knights that specialize in using blasters.
Oh.
Yeah, she's like the poster child of the Grey Paladins.
Okay.
And she's one of the few survivors of Order 66.
Surprising.
Mm-hmm. And she helped found a group called Whiplash, which basically helped Jedi survivors and their associates get off of Coruscant before the Empire got them.
That's cool.
Yeah, she became a, she's a childhood friend of his prominent Jedi character, but, and eventually his lover, but she got killed not too long after.
Of course, everyone dies.
Yep, everybody dies.
It's Star Wars, everybody dies.
And then, of course, moving on, we have Bib Fortuna, the majordomo of Jabba the Hutt.
Yep, fucker is so white, he hardly goes out in the fucking sun.
He is a fucking albino, Twi'lek.
He does look albino.
Oh, man. And he's kind of an interesting character because even though he became the majordomo of Jabba the Hutt, he actually tried to assassinate him multiple times.
Really?
Yeah. He, like, pretends to be loyal to Jabba.
One of Jabba's most trusted men. He tries to kill him several fucking times.
Yeah, he failed in his assassination attempts against Jabba. And he kind of has this philosophy of... he hates that the Twi'lek are basically a slave race to people like Jabba and everything. And he kind of has
He works for a Hutt.
Yep. He kind of has this idea that once he gets into a prominent political position amongst the Twi'leks, he foresees a future where the Twi'lek become this dominant race in the galaxy, an entire race of spies and assassins.
I could definitely see the women working on that.
Oh yeah, totally. Considering how ubiquitous Twi'lek slave girls across the galaxy, might as well use them as undercover spies and assassins.
Imperial Intelligence missed out on that for ages.
Oh yeah, totally, totally. They would have been good spies.
Yeah.
Kind of surprising that didn't happen earlier, but, you know, whatever.
But that's why we have character customization, so we can make Twi'lek.
Oh, yeah. And then, let's see, there's Suluque, who is the pink Twi'lek that gets together with Kudluque.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So she's, I believe, a refugee of Ryloth who went to this planet called Sulukumai to become a farmer. And she had a previous marriage with another human, which is why she has her hybrid Twi'lek human children and everything. Kudluque is just a stepfather. Yeah.
And he's a damn good dad.
And looking over some concept art of Luluque, she looks fucking hot.
You're going to have to send it to
me. Yeah, she is fucking hot.
Is it me or do the Twi'lek human hybrids, aside from Kanan and Hera's son, he looks okay.
Yeah.
He still looks relatively human. These two, the two hybrid kids, are fucking creepy.
Yeah, a little bit. Just a little bit.
The little boy is.
And actually, kind of a minor spoiler, but Kudluque and his entire family actually appear in season one of The Bad Batch.
Oh.
Where they actually have to get off of Sulukumai before, you know, they get deported and everything.
Yeah.
But anyway, let me actually see if I could find that concept image I mentioned before. Look, she is fucking gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's gorgeous.
She is fucking hot. Anyway, moving on. There's Rhyonna Saren, who is a escaped slave girl who became a criminal and then female hero of a Rebel Alliance. And she's a close associate of Kyle Katarn, if you don't know that name.
I've seen him on Galaxy of Heroes, I just don't know his backstory.
Okay, he's a very prominent original Star Wars character. He's that meme of basically shaving his beard with a lightsaber and everything.
Okay.
But anyway, so she's one of the few Twi'lek that actually has that cybernetic Leku on one side.
Okay.
Yeah. And let's see. There's Ascara, a female Twi'lek bounty hunter who, ironically enough, was forced to become one after her little sister was captured to become a slave, and she had to do favors for a criminal gang.
Oh, no.
Yeah, she was forced to become a bounty hunter to make sure her little sister didn't get, you know, enslaved and everything.
Yeah.
And then there's Leontei Sherish, who is a senator, governor, and eventually supreme chancellor of a republic during Swator.
She's a bitch.
She is a bitch. So you have encountered her. Cool.
I've encountered her in Knights of the Eternal Throne.
Yep.
Which she tries to literally take over command
of the
Alliance. It's like, bitch!
Yeah, she was originally a slave of a Sith Empire, and when she became supreme chancellor, she basically restarted the war between the Republic and the Sith Empire.
There is, I think in the Republic arc, yeah, the Republic side of Swator, there is a story on Terrace where she is making the initiative to repair Terrace. Mm-hmm. You know, she's heading that initiative.
Yep.
I haven't finished that yet, but all I know is of Suresh from Knights of the Eternal Throne, and she's a bitch!
She is a bitch. I mean, like, considering that she was a slave of the Sith Empire and she recently got liberated from them, her mindset is kind of understandable, but then again, she's also a power-hungry asshole.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are the prominent Twi'leks that I thought were pretty interesting. As you'll notice, a majority of them are female, because that's the most popular side of the Twi'leks.
And that's what's more shown in media.
Yep. And those are the ones that I came across and that had any interest for me. And that is all I have for the Twi'lek as a race. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. The Twi'leks are really cool.
They are really cool.
They're one of the more expanded upon races, so that really helped flesh out the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of notable characters. If you look them up on, like, Wikipedia or something, dozens and dozens and dozens of pages of just Twi'leks.
Yeah, dozens and dozens. Like, there's, like, a separate category for the Rudian Twi'lek and the Lufian Twi'lek and just Twi'leks in general.
A lot of them are just background characters.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's how prominent they are in this galaxy.
Yeah, I guarantee you, like, maybe, like, with the exception of a couple of episodes, every single episode of A Clone Wars, you have a singular Twi'lek in the background.
If that.
Yeah. Like, there's this, I remember there's this certain Twi'lek Jedi Master that just appeared in the background for a couple of episodes. And then, in one episode, and like, literally the intro, she just gets killed by Maul.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Jesus.
But yeah,
They're cannon fodder.
Cannon fodder and eye candy.
Yep.
Pretty much. I think as much as I like to joke that they are fan service characters, and yes, a good majority of them are, I do like the certain elegance that they portray in a lot of the female Twi'leks.
Yeah.
And of course, we have a couple of notable male Twi'lek characters. I mean, Ornfri Tah, not so much, but you know.
But Cham Syndulla is like, he paints the picture of the basic male Twi'lek.
Yeah, the basic male Twi'lek and the other side of the Twi'leks that see slavery as bad and everything. Yeah, the Twi'lek are very interesting, and I wouldn't mind like a couple of solo movies surrounding Hera Syndulla and all of those, and the usual plights that a Twi'lek have to go through on an everyday basis.
I mean, at least a series like what they're doing for Ahsoka or something.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah. And that is our episode of Can Mayonnaise Kill a Jedi? Or in this case, how many times could I not mention fan service?
Or how many times can you count that we said Twi'lek?
Yeah, take a shot for every time I say Twi'lek.
Just include a Twi'lek counter in one of the corners of the screen.
It'll probably be like something like over 5,000 or something.
It's over 9,000!
But anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. It's kind of a longer episode for a species episode than usual, but that's the way I like it, ironically enough.
Yeah, I like that this was pretty fleshed out.
Yeah. I just wish the Togruta and Verpine were as visit much in depth.
I know, right?
But anyway,
I mean, not even the Chiss were this in depth, right?
No. I mean, okay, we need a dedicated episode for the Chiss in all fairness.
Keep your idea.
Yeah. But yeah, this was a really fun episode. Do you want to take a gander at what our next episode is going to be about, Hannah?
I have no clue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is basically my turn. The previous turns have been Hannah, the Twi'lek, the Exarchoon, and everything. Now it is my turn to take the spotlight. And for our next episode, we'll kind of be doing a little trilogy as a build-up for one of my most favorite faction in all of Star Wars.
Oh?
We will be starting with the Trade Federation.
Oh, hell yeah. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, and it'll be a slow build-up to eventually the Confederacy of Independent Systems.
That's going to take a while.
It will take a little bit of a while, but yes. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to talk about the Trade Federation and the multiple layers. Like, it's not just some evil corporation and everything.
Yeah.
But anyway, you have any closing statements for our audience or just me in general, Hannah?
I hope that you and our audience both have a happy holiday.
Yeah, may the Force be with you. And make sure to treat your local Twi'lek very well this year.
Yes.
Anyway, bye-bye.
Bye.